all know about light and noise pollution, such a nuisance. It's harder to see the stars or hear your colleagues over the pneumatic drills outside your office. For animals, though, it's more than annoying. It's a disorienting death sentence with catastrophic consequences. That's the premise of author and Atlantic writer Ed Yong's riveting article, Our Blinding, Blaring World, excerpted from his new book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. You may know Yong from his Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic, which put a pause on some of that light and sound that's confounding so many animals. But it's back, and so is Ed Yong. Welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we know some of this, but the way you lay this out, first of all, that animal senses are much more intense and more critical to them than ours are, developed literally over thousands of years, and that it's how animals understand their world. You use the German word Umwelt. Have I got that right? Umwelt?
What? That's right, yes. Umwelt literally means environment, but it's not used to mean the physical environment of an animal. It means their sensory world. It's the specific set of sights and sounds and smells and other stimuli that they can tap into. And that is unique to them. You know, our Umwelt feels to us to be total and complete, but it's really only a thin slice of the world. We can't see a lot of the colors that other animals can see. We can't detect the magnetic field of the earth in the way that a sea turtle or a songbird can. We miss bits of information in the world around us. But we also flood that world with stimuli of our own making, with light and with noise that can harm the creatures around us, that sort of forces them to live in our human Umwelt rather than respecting their own sensory worlds. Right. And this can be hugely detrimental or possibly even fatal to them.
Yeah, and some adapt, but most don't. So let's start with bats, for instance. We've heard the phrase echolocation. How is it not working because of man?
So echolocation is a way of sensing one's environment using rebounding sound. So bats and dolphins produce high-pitched noises that then bounce off objects in front and around them, and the animals can then read those echoes. And they can do this so well that they can navigate through a dark cave without hitting obstacles. They can pluck a spider off its web in complete darkness. Mm. And many animals are well adapted to a dark world and have come to rely on darkness to thrive in, but we flood the dark with light. Like a lot of pollinating insects get drawn towards lights at night, whether street lights or otherwise, sometimes with fatal results.
Yeah. Well, you know, what really struck me is that you joined a scientist who was doing an experiment replacing white light with, I believe, red light in some areas.
Yes.
And you looked up at one point and you could see the Milky Way, which, you know, we can't see in different areas now. And you quote a visual ecologist, the thought of light traveling billions of years from distant galaxies only to be washed out in the last billionth of a second by the glow of a strip mall depresses me no end. I mean, it's depressing and it's sad, but it's devastating for creatures.
It is. I've written that sensory pollution is the pollution of disconnection. It detaches us from the cosmos, from the universe, from the sights of the very stars above us. But it also disconnects animals from the cues that they need to sense, the alarm calls of their peers, the courtship songs of potential mates, the messages that they send to one another. We can get a sense of how much smaller the world becomes because of noise and light pollution. When we think about like the early phases of the pandemic, a lot of people suddenly realized that they could hear a ton of birds that they couldn't hear before. Mm. And that's partly because a lot of people were much quieter than before. The world was quieter.
And when I mentioned that there was a scientist who was given permission to change light bulbs in a parking lot in Grand Teton, you know, with the National Park Service, that's when you saw the Milky Way. But what did it do for creatures to have the lights go from white to red?
White and blue wavelengths, which are really, really common in a lot of like modern LEDs, they have a huge effect on insects. You know, they're luring pollinators away from the plants that they're meant to service. Every color has good and bad sides for different creatures. But just that one switch can make light at night be less detrimental. You know, this is an example where we need sort of break out of our own Umwelt, right? Our own sensory bubble. Red light feels like quite sinister to us. But I looked around and suddenly realized I could see a lot further. And I looked up and I could see the stripe of our own galaxy, something that I'd never been able to see before in the Northern Hemisphere. This is just one example of how a small change, pushing ourselves out of our own like cultural norms around these things, can give us better, wider experiences that also are more beneficial and better suited to the other animals around us.
Yeah, you write about when Thomas Edison first commercialized light bulbs, 1,000 birds died colliding into these towers in Decatur, Illinois. Mm-hmm. We've done stories on the 9/11 Memorial Tribute in Light that has two of these huge beams of light. And everybody realized, oh my gosh, migrating birds are being attracted to this light and they're dying. So they started turning the lights off every 20 minutes to free them. Explain that pull. It was almost as if in turning off the lights, it was breaking a magnetic field.
Right. The lights of that display, and often like strong vertical sources of illumination, for more than a century now have been waylaying migrating birds. And you might think, like, what's the problem of being sort of distracted by some light? Migration is really taxing for birds. They need all the energy they can get. Being sent astray can be fatal for them. And I think, like, this example also hints at why this problem is so pernicious and hard to grapple with. Like, we think of light as a good thing. We equate it with safety. We equate it with beauty. We don't think of it as a pollutant, but it absolutely can be if we shine it at the wrong time of day. Mm-hmm. You know, for billions of years, the Earth has had an unbroken cycle of light and dark, and we're starting to break that cycle.
Well, you talk about how because of all the light pollution, we can't see what we used to see, we can't hear what we used to hear. And there was a science experiment where some researchers built a phantom road. It didn't have cars, it didn't have, but they just did a loop of the sound of road noise. And animals in that area lost weight, they failed.
Yeah, this experiment by Jesse Barber and his colleagues was pivotal, I think, in showing like the effect of noise on its own. Like, you could argue, like, if there's a loud road, maybe the animals are harmed by the exhaust fumes or something else. Maybe they're hit by the cars directly. No, this was just a string of speakers playing out the sound of a road. And that was enough to disrupt the community of wildlife in this area. And that, you know, we sort of don't think of light and noise in this way. We don't think of them as the equivalent of like chemicals billowing from a smokestack or plastics gathering in the ocean, but they can also be pollutants in the same way.
Yeah. But to someone who would say, well, that's really too bad, but that's how we're evolving, that's the way of the world. You also tell of the, is it pinon pine trees? You know, what is the effect, selfishly, on mankind, you know, of an animal not doing what it used to do because it's driven away by light or sound?
Right, so there's a really interesting study in New Mexico showing that gas compressors to like extract natural gas drives away a scrub jay, a species of bird that disperses the seeds of these pine trees. And these trees are really important. They are a foundational species for hundreds of other species, including indigenous Americans. It provides a lot of them with food and with shelter. If noise drives the jays away from areas where these pine forests are, you're going to lose large tracts of forest, and you're going to do that over a century timescale. So there are absolutely ways in which humans are going to lose out. Pollinating insects are massively affected by light at night, and that's a huge problem for us. The base of our food chain relies on pollination. It relies on the presence and work of insects. Even if without the self-interested argument, I think it's a tragedy. Baby turtles hatching from a beach are sometimes lured up towards a beach by the light of human settlements and away from the sea. People in Florida have found like hundreds of baby turtles like dead under a mercury vapor lamp. That alone should gall us into action.
Okay, so what is the action? You have a terrific sentence about Umwelten, the German word for these sensory worlds. And you write, a moth will never know what a zebra finch hears in its song. A zebra finch will never feel the electric buzz of a black ghost knife fish. A knife fish will never see through the eyes of a mantis shrimp. A mantis shrimp will never smell the way a dog can. A dog will never understand what it's like to be a bat. We don't know all those things either, but we're the only animal who can try. So just leave us with, what is it that someone can do? that helps protect a creature's umwelt.
To me, this is not a thing about like individual people switching off their light bulbs at night. This is a thing for society to deal with on a grand scale. Dimming or switching off like building lights at night or street lights when they aren't in use. Putting barriers in place that block light and noise from reaching further than they should do. Changing the colours of LEDs from white to red. You can do a lot of this through policy, and that is the main route through which we need to fight this problem. We talk a lot about individual choices, but individual action cannot compensate for societal irresponsibility. And we have this unique gift to consider the sensory worlds of other animals, and that gives us a responsibility and a privilege.
Ed Young, you can read his article, Our Blinding, Blaring World, from The Atlantic at herenow.org. And his new book is An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. We'll look for that. Ed, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.